And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peak. Before we introduce our next guest, I wanted to let everybody know in the next couple of hours, NASA will be launching the ICON spacecraft. ICON, an acronym for the Ionospheric Connection Explorer. It's going to study the interplay between weather on Earth and the ever-changing conditions in space, also known as space weather. And on July 19th, we will have the chief scientist of ICON on the program from Goddard Space Flight, and we'll be talking about why it's important to understand space weather and what that's going to do for many of our technologies, including radio, GPS, and a whole bunch of other things. So stay tuned for that. That'll be on July 19th. Well, from precision of the Industrial Revolution, we're going to be talking about precision of genetics. And when we think of genetics, many of us think about dominant and recessive traits. What gives us curly or straight hair, blue or brown eyes, a bald head or a full head of hair? But people like our next guest, local geneticist Dr. Brian Ward, have spent a lifetime exploring the most recent advances in genetics. How genetics can help us target specific cancers, how we can edit genes to produce healthier and stronger species, and what the ethical considerations are of doing these sorts of things. Brian Ward is the founder and principal of Advantage Genomics Consulting. He joins us to talk about how the focused work with genetics can help us identify genetic abnormalities earlier in the hopes of correcting certain things, in identifying victims or even perpetrators of crime, and much more. He joins us in the studio. Brian Ward, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be here today and to chat with you.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Well, it's a brave new world, and in precision medicine, there's so much going on. Why don't you first define it for us?
I'd be happy to. So, several years ago, we would use a one-size-fits-all method of treatment. We think, historically, let's talk about a headache. You know, headache, you used to have an aspirin. Well, now you have ibuprofen, you have acetaminophen, you have aspirin. We have all these different treatments to personalize a individual to a treatment. So that's really what precision medicine is changing. What we do is we try and understand what's going on with a person's defects in the genes, and then we tailor the treatment specifically to that individual. So every person gets an individualized personal medicine treatment.
And while this is going on, are geneticists communicating with what sort of treatments are working with what sort of, let's say, for an example, lung cancers, and they can come up with sort of a guide to different things to try?
Exactly. Let's talk about breast cancer. So, for example, one of the first personalized or precision medicines was something called Herceptin. And Herceptin was a drug that's used to treat breast cancer. And during the clinical trials, it was not working very well. And it wasn't until the geneticists found that those people who have a particular type of genetic abnormality were susceptible to Herceptin treatment that Herceptin became the wonderful drug it is today. Same thing's true for lung cancer. If you have a particular type of lung cancer and a particular type of genetic change, you can tailor the medicine to that particular type of cancer and therefore affect a longer remission and a better outcome.
So this is interesting, and Brian, I'm not sure I completely understand it, but if you are, you know, we have these tools now in genetics, like mapping your genome and going through and figuring out what's in your DNA before you have cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, and then do we also have a mechanism through once you do have the cancer, then going back through and charting what the mutation specifically is. Can you explain that?
Sure. What you're referring to really is more is called personalized medicine rather than precision medicine. So let's say that you have a family history of premenopausal breast cancer, and you chose to have your genes tested for an abnormality that would give you a susceptibility to breast cancer. That can be done and is done on a routine basis. If then you have the susceptibility to breast cancer, there are certain things that you can do prophylactically to reduce your lifetime risk of breast or ovarian cancer. So that's happening on a routine basis now.
Okay, that makes sense. And so what are some of the tools in genetics in the last, you know, 10 years or so that have come on that have allowed us these types of advancements to be able to have precision medicine?
One of the biggest advancements is we are able to sequence DNA. So DNA is a life instruction, or the set of instructions for our life. There's DNA in almost every cell of our body. And that DNA really is what defines who we are and what we are. Over the last couple of decades, we've begun to be able to sequence DNA, to look at each individual gene and look at each individual sequence within the DNA. That probably is the biggest advancement. When I started in this field, we were lucky if we could look at 10 or 12 bases of DNA, little tiny snippets. Now it's routine for individuals to have their entire set of genetic instructions sequenced and look for mutations within those sequences.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Brian Ward. He's the founder and principal of Advantage Genomics Consulting. He joins us to talk about the focused work with genetics that can help us identify genetic abnormalities earlier in the hopes of correcting disease. Dr. Ward, what is garbage DNA?
Well, as it turns out, garbage DNA really isn't garbage. But what we think about when we think about DNA is that DNA is made up of little letters. Those letters define a gene, and a gene defines the protein in the cell, and the protein does the work. So originally, we thought that the DNA would read like an encyclopedia or a story, that would one gene would go to the next gene, go to the next gene. But in actuality, the genes are separated by stuttering pieces of DNA or DNA that's not necessary. So of all the DNA in our body, probably only, 10 or 15% of it really codes for gene, and the rest of it just kind of hangs around. And so it really is called garbage DNA, because it doesn't apparently have any specific function.
And in your consulting work, do you work with proteins as well?
No.
Okay. All right. Because that's a whole other area, which is fascinating.
It's a whole other science. And, the science is moving so quickly these days that individuals must concentrate on one discipline versus another.
Right. Okay.
So I just have to ask you, what does something like, is it 23andMe and Ancestry.com, what do they allow us to find out? And what are the caveats about that? Or not caveats, but how limited are they once we get back our genetic reading from an organization like that?
Well, they're in transition. Previously, I would call it recreational genetics.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, it's fun to do for an individual to find out your heritage, to find out, if you have any shoestring relations, and it's kind of recreational. Now they're beginning to have approved tests where they can offer these tests directly to consumers. So it's a direct-to-consumer genetic test. It's somewhat controversial and it's somewhat limited, but that's probably where the science is going.
It's funny that you say recreational genetics, because in John's intro, I think in my, one genetics class I took in college, 101, we talked about recessive and dominant. It's kind of a funny thing to predict if we're going to have curly hair or straight hair. But that to me is sort of illustrates also recreational genetics, and is of no huge use to us. It could be a predictor of, a physical trait, but that's about it. But now I think, we're able to use genetic mapping or testing to really service us in a variety of ways. And one of the new technologies is CRISPR technologies, and that's actually taking genes and editing them. So is that predicting a mutation and then being able to change it? Talk about that in layman's terms, of course.
So CRISPR is a relatively new technology. It has a potential to be one of the most powerful technologies that genetics has ever developed. Basically, what CRISPR is an acronym for a little tiny genomic or protein machine that can edit DNA. So if you find find and replace functions in word processing, you type in a word and you say, wherever you see this word, find it and replace it with this other word. So that's what CRISPR can do. Prior to the finding CRISPR, to change a mutation within a cell or to introduce DNA was a very laborious project and would take easily a year or two. Now with CRISPR, you can even buy CRISPR kits and do your own genetic editing at home if you wish, with plants and algae and things like that. But it's an exciting new technology. What it allows us to do now is it allows us to say, if you have a mutation or a change in your DNA, or if you have a defect in your DNA, we can use CRISPR to create a new piece of DNA and to correct that altered mutation. The challenge, of course, is that's a slippery slope, mm-hmm. because we can use that to heal defects. So, for example, let's say if you had an eye defect and you wanted to correct that eye defect, that is now being investigated with an FDA-approved clinical trial. So we can heal. But then there's the other challenge that we have, which is, would we want to use this CRISPR technology to enhance? So do we want to create, for example, pigs with less fat and more muscle, which you can actually do?
Wow.
I think it was about last year I read a book. It was a fictional book by, I think it was Daniel Suarez, who's been on the program before. He writes about technology. And he was, he had this, the basis of the book was on these black market recreational labs that were set up to take CRISPR and to make modifications to people and to work on enhancements. And there were a lot of ethical questions that were brought up in that book. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yes, a little bit. Of course, I'm not an ethicist. There are some wonderful ethicists at the University of Utah who are beginning to tackle that, those types of questions. Not only that, but they're also involved in slowing down the evolution of this technology until it can be studied and certain guidelines developed. But yes, it's possible, and there are three, like I said, there are now three clinical trials that have been approved using CRISPR to try and treat blindness and also try and treat some specific cancers.
Right. But, you know, as in all technology, once that freight train leaves the station, it's sometimes hard to stop. And just because we would like to possibly regulate it, I don't want to pick on the Chinese, but let's say the Chinese wanted to bring woolly mammoths, which they're trying to do, or try to bring something else back or some new type of animal, it could really disrupt our whole animal kingdom, and nobody could possibly stop them. I mean, if somebody wanted to do something, is that correct?
Well, there's always dangers in new technologies, and that one always has to exhibit caution. And you are correct. The Chinese have introduced new genes into human embryos. Those human embryos were not allowed to proceed any farther than about a 6 or an 8 cell stage, but that's possible. And as with all technology, you have to be careful in using very new and very, very powerful tools, because changes can occur that are irreversible.
Hmm. Brian, before you started your consulting business, you had a long history with Myriad Genetics, which I believe, is that a research park at the University of Utah campus? Yeah. And so one of the things that, though in those labs at Myriad, you were asked to do was to help identify victims of the attack on the World Trade Centers. And we know that in your labs there, you know, there's a range to identifying victims to identifying those perpetrators of crimes. And how does that come down? Talk about that.
It comes back to the garbage DNA, yeah. Believe it or not. So at my time during Myriad, there were two major thrusts at Myriad. One was on the identifying individuals with a predisposition to breast and ovarian cancer. and there was another forensics division. And now, of course, that was many years ago. They've branched out, and they're a very large and prosperous company, and they have a whole range of different diagnostics that they do. But we were involved in the World Trade Center to begin to sequence pieces of garbage DNA that could be used to identify victims of the attack. How it works is each of us have a particular set or a barcode of garbage DNA that's unique to our families. And so by looking at an individual's barcode of DNA, 13 different markers, we can then predict if you're related to another person. So what we did for the World Trade Center is we were given artifacts from individuals, for example, a toothbrush or a hair comb or some other types of dental floss, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we could extract DNA. Then we would basically look for 13 markers in that DNA. And then when the New York Medical Examiner's Office found a victim, they would do the same thing, and we would see if they would match, and then we could positively identify the individual.
Wow. Did they have to match on all 13 markers, or could you have a larger percentage that would indicate a match?
In this particular instance, basically, if we sometimes were not able to get all 13 markers, but if we got 9 or 10, because we were trying to match an artifact with an individual, they would match perfectly. And so it was fairly easy to do, but it was a Herculean effort, and it's still going on.
Mm. Wow.
Dr. Ward, what's out there that's exciting, that's showing promise, may not be here for 10 years, but it's just in the early stages?
I think their personalized medicine and predictive medicine will continue to expand exponentially. It would be just, there's going to be an explosion of taking an individual with cancer, removing the cancer, sequencing the cancer, and then finding out what drug will target that individual cancer. So that's one area that will explode. I also think that the CRISPR technology has unlimited potential to give us a tool that can really change an individual or an organism's genetic component. And while that is a huge individual tool to be used, we have to be careful, of course, because of the power.
Yeah, maybe 100 years ago, they started taking criminals that were convicted, and they started doing fingerprinting, and now they're doing what they call DNA barcoding. Is the next step that the government may want to DNA barcode all of us?
You know, I'm not an ethicist. So I will mention, though, that, in Utah, for example, everyone who is arrested does have their barcode made, whether they're convicted or not. And that's becoming more and more of a common practice. So the huge amounts of DNA material and information will be a tool for our future.
Okay, Dr. Brian Ward, founder and principal of Advantage Genomics Consulting, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Brian. And we want to